they're welcome to drop me a line at thenightreport@gmail.com. That's thenightreport, K-N-I-G-H-T, at gmail.com. Essentially, it's a project that involves digitizing a lot of material over the past 32 years of Robert's professional life. And so it's kind of vast. And if people would like to help in that effort, they can contact me at that email address. And I also wanted to mention that in the early spring, we will be having a public memorial in Robert's memory. And the venue and the date and time will be announced once that's all confirmed.
Cool. And so I'm going to play another piece of music, and I'm going to give out that phone number for if you would like to weigh in with some thoughts. We've been having a very interesting and enjoyable conversation this evening. And the number for your phone calls is 212-209-2900. That's 212-209-2900. And I'm going to play another piece of music, and it is called You Are No One's Slave by Earth Driver. So stay tuned as I pick up your calls. Have a caller, so we're going to say hello. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
Yes, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks.
Hey, I was just wondering if any of you got anybody heard of like a book where this guy like goes off on a tangent, like you think she's like sent from God or something to wake up the world, you know, to all the trouble and like the end of the world, like almost imminent because of all the like sloth that we've been letting all the sins go by without looking at him and stuff, and now he's culpable, but like, you know, he's trying to take over the world, tell everybody how bad they are, and then he admits his own faults and stuff, but like, you know, he like lays it all out there and stuff, and, you know, and then some of it's in poetry and some of it's just like a diatribe, you know. But it's a real short poetry book, and I was wondering if anybody heard it. It's called Temporary Insanity, Calling the Cavalry. A little religious for like a lot of people. A lot of people aren't into religion anymore, and I don't know what's more religious than the fate of the human race. I don't know where God would not step in if it has to do with the fate of the human race and the planet. If you can't call on God, then I don't know when you're gonna call on him. You know what I mean?
Well, that's an interesting idea. I haven't heard of the book.
Oh, you should give it a read, because I've heard that the guy, you know, like I said, he goes a little far fetched, I guess, but he's out there, but.
What is the name of the book again?
Temporary Insanity, Called in the Calvary, as in Jesus Christ, Calvary.
Okay.
So, like, people might actually have to make some heavy-duty sacrifices, you know, because it looks like, I mean, don't look now, but it looks like it could be that kind of time where people are actually going to have to put themselves aside a little bit and look at the big picture and see, you know, we may have been going the wrong way for a long time, and we're at the edge of the cliff. And, you know, we either got to stop real short and turn around, or, you know, that, you know, some people might have to fall off the cliff. I don't know, but I hope nobody starts pushing people, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, thank you for your call. It's an interesting idea.
Check out the book, because I think it's hitting exactly what you're talking about right now. It's almost like you read the book and are actually saying what the book says.
Right.
All right. I'll be a totally serious. You check it out. You'll say, oh, yeah, that's exactly what we're talking about.
All right. Thank you.
Hey, yeah, I'm going. Good luck and God bless.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, that was interesting. You know, that's a really interesting concept in terms of the whole God thing. I happen to think God is us doing this. So if God's going to save us, we have to be the hands and the eyes and the ones to do it. To me, yeah, that's how it really works.
I'm a big fan of Krishnamurti.
Mm-hmm.
And he says in one of his passages, you know, who made this ugly world, this miserable world with all this fighting and division and chaos? He said, did God do it? Messy God.
Hmm.
You know, and I think it is quite a mess.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, God. That's a huge one.
Yeah, it is huge. I actually think that there's been a lot of change and there's a lot of improvement. You know, because I've been around for a while. You know, I was around in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s. You know, so I saw the level of hatred that was in the world.
Right.
And the prejudice and the discrimination. And things are not good, but they're really better than they were.
Right.
On a lot of levels. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. We have another call coming in. Shall I say hello and see... hello, you're on the air.
Yes, hello.
Yes, please turn off your radio.
Yes. Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Okay, my name is Brother Divine.
Hi.
And I just needed to say that, you know, your show is very positive. It's right on point, and I love the topic of discussion. One of the things that I think is urgent is for us for each group of people to just recognize their worth and their individuality in this society. As black people, you know, we sometimes try to fight everybody else's problems and not recognizing our own assets that we bring to humanity.
Mm.
There was a reason why Africa is the center of civilization and why we are black, and we should never forget that in fighting the struggle for humanity. I don't think we should use it to oppress people, but we should keep in touch with the reality of our existence and the struggles that we go through. Because a lot of times we try to fight for the Asians, we try to fight for the Chinese, we try to fight for everybody except ourselves. And not recognizing that we have our own specific assets that we bring to humanity that we are supposed to utilize to free the whole planet.
I agree with everything you said, except for when you went to the point about us doing some kind of protest for the Chinese.
Well,
I don't recall a
major
black protest on behalf of Asian people.
Yeah, well, I think it's just kind of a point that I think that what I'm understanding that you're saying is that black people have to also have a strong recognition for our own value,
right,
and the fact that we are rooted in very ancient knowledge.
Right.
And if we can dig deep into our Akash, you know, into our consciousness and into our history with a true appreciation of what it is, then indeed we do have something to value. And the reason I think that that's important is not so much that we shouldn't be protesting for other people or fighting for global peace, but I think that there's a real need, especially among young people of color, black people, and to some degree people of other racial groupings, of not truly understanding the value of their own culture and the value of themselves as beings, and somehow thinking or feeling or experiencing life as being less than. And this is a significant problem, I believe.
The reason I say that is because, not that I'm knocking Europeans or, you know, white people, but whenever they get involved in a situation, they bring their whiteness into the situation. They bring their history into the situation. They always don't forget their cultural identity and how it's affecting their perspective on the situation, where they continuously ask us to forget our cultural identity, forget about slavery, forget about the oppression, forget about everything, and just deal with it as a normal person, which is totally, you know, ridiculous, because you cannot forget your cultural history and how that affects your perspective on the situation. That's always in your mind. That is always affecting you. And yet they want us to leave our ancestry behind, leave our cultural identity, and just deal with the situation as if you're just American, as if you're just a human. And you have a cultural identity that gives you a certain perspective on the situation that nobody else can have. And you have to be able to deal with that bias, whether it's a bias that's pro or negative, but it's a bias that we have to accept as black people and be able to say that this is the way we see it. Because they want to make Obama like every other president. And he cannot accept, like, you know, like, from my perspective, you are not like every other president. You're the first black president. You're the first African-American descendant president. So the decisions you make for the black community, the decisions you make for the other countries, should be based on your cultural historical preference.
But then again, it's not. But you can't really, you know, I think he needs to take ownership of that. And I just want to respond in one way, if I may. I'm a black woman. I don't identify with the American history as my identity, in the sense that an ancestry of slavery, because to me that's like the last second in the cultural legacy and in the cultural richness of African people. You know, because I think part of the problem that our children have is not that they're not remembering slavery, but they were not taught that they come from royalty, that they were not taught that they come from a continent that built pyramids and has a deep culture throughout Africa. I've heard a lot of people say, well, pyramids are just in Egypt. No, there are rich archaeological sites throughout the entire of Africa. There is reason to believe that what we see that came out of Egypt, what came out of Greece, what came out of Judea, all of that information comes from deep within Africa. The history of the African people is very rich and it is magnificent. And I think that that's what children and young people and people of color in this country really need to connect with. The fact that we are not, our lives didn't begin as human beings, slaves being, you know, dragged across the ocean. That there's a rich legacy that is rich within our heritage, it's rich within our DNA, it's rich within our intelligence and our capacity. And it's why, despite all these obstacles, that black people have thrived and been creative and been leaders in so many areas. So I think that's part of what needs to be connected to, and not just the legacy of slavery.
Right. I totally agree with you.
Okay, thanks. All right, thank you for your call.
No problem.
Okay, bye-bye. Any other thoughts, Paulette?
I couldn't agree with you more. I think that inherent in our history is a dignity, and it's easy to be brainwashed into forgetting that you possess that dignity. Mm-hmm. And the only way that you can bring that back to the surface is by learning something about your history. And I think that's critical. The knowledge is power. And if you and the deeper your knowledge, the more powerful you become.
Yeah. Part of the problem is that the culture, if you look at the media, you don't see that reflected there. So that's where a lot of the difficulty comes. Jeremiah, did you want to respond?
Yeah. I first of all, I want to recommend a book called African World Revolution by Dr. John Henrik Clark. That's one of the most important books I ever read, and it just gives an incredible scope of information, but also just incredible insight into Malcolm X, Marcus Garvey, C.L.R. James, and any number of other scholars and activists who haven't gotten their historic due. And there's actually an incredible segment about Israel-Palestine. I got my formative education about Israel-Palestine actually from African World Revolution by John Henrik Clark. So, yeah, I couldn't agree more. I went to Africa when I was 3 years old. My parents were wise enough to go on a family trip to Africa when I was three. And then I went back on a project where I helped build a library when I was 15. And then I've been back to South Africa three times after those trips. So, I mean, it's basically my hope and my plan to go to Africa as much as I possibly can in my life. My mom has been to, like, maybe 17 or 18 African countries. I'm not sure how many my grandmother has been to, but close to that. And, you know, I just think that, yeah, we have to go back to our roots. We have to go back to Africa. Don't be afraid of Africa. You know, go back to the source. Go back to the heart.
This is true. And I think it's also important that we really deepen that journey in terms of our education into some of the ancient teachings that have been preserved by some of the priests of the different tribal ancestry. I was for a little while connected and studying with the Dogon. Yeah, which is not the Dogon are not limited to Mali. They, you know, they talk about it as their one tribe in Mali. But the Dogon people are actually the priest class of the Egyptian era. And so when, you know, the Egypt was invaded from the north, the priest went back into the, you know, into the bush, into the African, down into the lands of Africa so that they could preserve the knowledge. And a lot of these priests still have very ancient knowledge. And one of the interesting things that I learned is that the word for the continent is not truly Africa. Africa is a name created by the Greeks, and it was really just a question of, you know, they were opposing each other in a way, you know. So I think the African people had a nasty name for the Greeks, and the Greeks had a nasty name for the people of Africa. But Africa actually means burning soul. Afri is burning, Ka is soul. So it was called Africa as a curse. And so I think
it kind of played out like that, unfortunately.
Yeah, it did. And so according to the Dogon, the true name of the continent is Merita. And and at the point that the kings of the continent were being overthrown, everything was changed. So if you, when you look at the map of Africa, the true way you would look at it is if you reversed it. And it was so Egypt was really would be considered at the bottom. And, you know, so it's kind of interesting in how they perceived the continent. And then they had trade routes all over the world. And so it's kind of interesting that a lot of the culture that we see that's been attributed to the Greeks and the Romans and, you know, actually were coming through, these really, really ancient people. And so they were in the Americas, they were in Asia. And so it was like a real vast empire, I guess you would call it. Yeah. And so, you know, so I just think that when we're looking at this stuff, we have to really try to get deep into some of the authentic history, because anything that we read or write even is based upon trying to dig the truth out of you know, what has been constructed, the lies that have been constructed about the people. And I think that that's true. You'll find that not just of African people. You'll find it in South Central America, the Middle East. There's always,
a lot of mythology.
Yeah, there's a lot that goes on that needs to be unveiled so that we can truly know what world history has been.
Yeah.
And I think that, like, this whole problem of racism, to the extent that it's been expressed in the world, is maybe 200, 300 years old. It really didn't exist the
right
way it is now.
There's a fascinating research by, what is his name, William Perry?
Mm-hmm.
The Invention of the White Race.
Yeah.
You know, it goes back to, like, actual documents where the language started to shift, where there was actually, like, a political interest in getting people to conceive of themselves in this way.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And I think when we start to look at all this, you know, maybe we can take a step back and recognize that, you know, the differences between one human being to another is really not that great.
Right.
You know, it's more of what the culture and the politics have made of the discernible differences. But if you look at the chemicals, the DNA, we're not that different one person to the next.
No, it's like a grain of sand that separates us.
Absolutely, and I guess it comes back to the point I made earlier about connectedness.
Yeah.
I mean, there's, you know, there are people who, I think to myself, you know, if someone picked me up and plopped me in the middle of Pakistan tomorrow, you know, I'm sure I'd make quite a few friends. And I think that just the shared humanity that we all have is something that, one, is invisible, and I would almost say spiritual, that's something to be celebrated, and I think that there is an inherent dignity in human beings, and it's always a question of bringing that out. I think of a book that I'm reading now, which is Martin Luther King's Why We Can't Wait, and he spends a lot of time discussing how the nonviolent peace movement had its power in its dignity, in showing how people who were attacked could actually stand there, be attacked, and know that the cameras were capturing this for the world to see, and how much, I don't know if I want to say restraint, but dignity is really the only word that I can come up with to describe.